He nipped at her nose, but she pulled back, gaze meeting his. Hunt let her see everything that lay there. I knew the moment you went snooping for my dildos. Hunt burst out laughing.
I can't tell if that's the truth.
You handled Jelly Jubilee with such care. How could I not love you for it? He laughed again, ducking to brush a kiss to her warm throat.
I'll take that.
He traced his fingers down her hip, the threadbare softness of her old t-shirt snagging against his calloused skin. He kissed her collarbone, inhaling the scent of her, his cock stirring.
So, what now?
Sex? He grinned.
No, I mean, fuck yes, but I don't want an audience.
He gestured over his shoulder and wing to the wall behind him.
Shall we get a hotel room somewhere in the city?
Somewhere on another continent.
Oh, Quinlan.
He kissed her jaw, her cheek, her temple. He whispered into her ear,
I really want to fuck you right now.
She shuddered, arching against him. Same. His hand slid from her waist to cup her ass.
This is torture.
He slipped his hand under her oversized shirt, finding her bare skin warm and soft. He traced his fingers along the seam of her lacy thong, down toward her thighs. Heat beckoned him, and she sucked in a breath as he halted millimeters short of where he wanted to be. But she placed a hand on his chest. What do I call you now? The words took a moment to register.
What?
I mean, what are we? Like, dating? Are you my boyfriend? He snorted.
You really want to say you're dating the Umbra Mortis?
I'm not keeping this private. She said it without an ounce of doubt. She brushed her fingers over his brow, like she knew what it meant to him. Hunt managed to ask,
What about Cormac and your ruse?
Well, after all that, I guess.
If they survived. She whooshed out a breath.
Boyfriend sounds weird for you. It's so young. But what else is there? If he had a star on his chest, Hunt knew it'd be glowing as he asked,
Partner?
Not sexy enough.
Lover?
Does that come with a ruff and lute? He swept a wing over her bare thigh.
Anyone ever tell you that you're a pain in the ass?
Just ye old lover. Hunt hooked his finger under the strap of her thong and snapped it. She yowled, swatting away his hand. But Hunt grabbed her fingers, laying them on his heart again.
What about mate?
Bryce stilled, and Hunt held his breath, wondering if he'd said the wrong thing. When she didn't reply, he went on.
Fae have mates, right? That's the term they use.
Mates are an intense thing for the Fae. She swallowed audibly. It's a lifetime commitment. Something sworn between bodies and hearts and souls. It's a binding between beings. You say I'm your mate in front of any Fae, and it'll mean something big to them.
And we don't mean something big like that?
He asked carefully, hardly daring to breathe. She held his heart in her hands, had held it since day one.
You mean everything to me,
she breathed, and he exhaled deeply. But if we tell Rune that we're mates, we're as good as married. To the Fae, we're bound on a biological, molecular level. There's no undoing it.
Is it a biological thing?
It can be. Some Fae claim they know their mates from the moment they meet them, that there's some kind of invisible link between them, a scent or soul bond.
Is it ever between species?
I don't know, she admitted, and ran her fingers over his chest in dizzying, taunting circles. But if you're not my mate, Athalar, no one is.
A winning declaration of love.
She scanned his face, earnest and open in a way she so rarely was with others. I want you to understand what you're telling people, telling the Fae, if you say I'm your mate.
Angels have mates, not as soul magic-y as the Fae. But we call life partners mates in lieu of husbands or wives.
Shahar had never called him such a thing. They'd rarely even used the term lover. The Fae won't differentiate. They'll use their intense-ass definition.
He studied her contemplative face. I feel like it fits. Like we're already bound on that biological level.
Me too. And who knows? Maybe we're already mates. It would explain a lot.
How intense things had been between them from the start. And once they'd crossed that last physical barrier, he had a feeling the bond would be even further solidified.
So, maybe they were already mates, by that fey definition.
Maybe Erd had long ago bound their souls, and they'd needed all this time to realize it. But did it even matter, if it was fate or choice to be together?
Hunt asked, Does it scare you, calling me your mate?
Her gaze dipped to the space between them, and she said quietly,
You're the one who's been defined by other people's terms for centuries.
Fallen, slave, umbra mortis.
I just want to make sure it's a title you're cool with having. Forever.
He kissed her temple, breathing in her scent.
Of everything I've ever been called, Quinlan, your mate will be the one I truly cherish.
Her lips curved. Did you hear the forever part?
I thought that's what this thing between us is.
We've known each other for like 5 months.
So?
My mom will throw a fit. She'll say we should date for at least 2 years before calling ourselves mates.
Who cares what other people think? None of their rules have ever applied to us anyway. And if we're some sort of predestined mates, then it doesn't make a difference at all.
She smiled again, and it lit up his entire chest. No, that was the star between her breasts. He laid a hand over the glowing scar, light shining through his fingers.
Why does it do that?
Maybe it likes you.
It glowed for Cormac and Rune.
I didn't say it was smart. Hunt laughed and leaned to kiss the scar.
All right, my lovely mate. No sex tonight.
His mate. His. And he was hers. It wouldn't have surprised him if her name were stamped on his heart. He wondered if his own were stamped on the glowing star in her chest.
Tomorrow night, we'll get a hotel room.
He brushed another kiss against her scar.
Deal.
Chapter 28. I'm glad to see you alive.
Rune stood on a familiar mental bridge, the lines of his body once more filled in with night and stars and planets. At the other end of the bridge waited that burning female figure. Long hair of pure flame floated around her, as if underwater, and what he could make out of her mouth was curved upward in a half smile.
So am I, he said.
He must have passed out on the couch in Bryce's apartment. He'd still been there at 2 in the morning, watching old game highlights with Ethan. Deck had long since gone to spend the night at Mark's place. Neither had turned up any solid footage of a meal at the docks, or concrete proof of the Reapers being sent from the Underking or Apollyon. The search for Danica at the gallery would take days, Deck had said before leaving, and he did have other work to do. Ethan had instantly volunteered to keep combing through it. The wolf pup wasn't bad. Rune could see them being friends if their people weren't constantly at each other's throats, literally. Rune said to Agent Daybright,
Thanks for trying to wake me up.
What happened?
Reapers.
Her flame guttered to a violent blue.
They attacked you?
Long story.
He angled his head.
So I don't need the crystal to reach you. I can just be unconscious, sleeping.
Perhaps the crystal was only needed to initiate contact between our minds. A beacon for your talents, she said. Now that your mind, and mine, knows where to go, you don't require the crystal anymore, and can contact me even in inopportune moments.
A pinprick of guilt poked at him. She was embedded in the higher ranks of the Empire. Had he endangered her when he'd been unconscious earlier, his mind blindly reaching for hers? But Daybright said,
I have information for you to pass on.
Yeah?
She straightened.
Is that how Ophian agents speak these days?
Yeah.
She had to be old then.
one of the Vanir who'd lived for so long that modern lingo was like a foreign language. Or gods, if she was an Asteri. Rune wished he had a wall or a doorway or a counter to lean against as he crossed his arms.
So, you're old school Pangeran.
Your position here isn't to learn about me. It's to pass along information. Who I am, who you are, is of no consequence.
She gestured to her flames.
This should tell you enough.
About what?
Her flames pushed closer to her body, turning a vibrant orange like the hottest embers, the kind that would burn to the bone.
About what shall happen if you ask too many prying questions.
He smiled slightly.
So, what's the intel?
The hit on the spine is a go.
Rune's smile faded.
When's the shipment?
3 days from now. It leaves from the Eternal City at 6 in the morning their time. No planned stops, no refueling. They'll travel swiftly northward, all the way to Forvos.
The mech suit prototype will be on the train?
Yes, and along with it, Imperial Transport is moving 50 crates of brimstone missiles to the northern front, along with 112 crates of guns and about 500 crates of ammunition.
Burning Solas, you're going to stage a heist?
I'm not doing anything,
Agent Daybright said.
Ophion will be responsible. I'd recommend destroying it all, though, especially that new mech suit. Don't waste time trying to unload anything from the trains, or you'll be caught.
Rune refrained from mentioning that Cormac had suggested something different. He'd said Ophion wanted to attain the suit, to study it, and use those weapons in their war.
Where's the best place to intercept?
He was really doing this, apparently. Pass this intel along, and he was officially aligning himself with the rebels.
That's for Ophion Command to decide.
He asked carefully,
Will Pippa Spetsos be assigned to the hit?
Or was she in Lunathian looking for Emil, as Therian suspected?
Does it matter?
Rune shrugged as nonchalantly as he could.
Just want to know whether we need to notify her.
I'm not privy to who Command sends on their missions.
Do you know where Pippa Spetsos is right now, though?
Her flame guttered for a moment.
Why do you have such interest in her?
He held up his hands.
No interest at all.
He could sense her suspicion, though, so he asked.
Will there be armed guards with the shipment?
Yes, about 100 wolves in and atop the cars, along with 12 aerial angel scouts above, all armed with rifles, handguns, and knives.
Forested areas would be best for a strike, then, to avoid being seen by the Malakim.
Anything else?
She angled her head.
None of this bothers you?
I've been in the Ox for a while. I'm used to coordinating shit.
Nothing like this, though. Nothing that put him firmly in the Asteri's line of fire.
That's a stupid thing to reveal. Ophion must have been desperate if they sent someone as untrained as you to deal with me.
Trust is a two-way street.
He gestured to the space between them. Another one of those soft laughs raked over his skin.
Do you have anything for me? What's this business with Pippa Spetsos?
Nothing at all. But thanks for trying to save my ass earlier.
I'd be a fool to let a valuable contact go to waste.
He bristled.
I'm touched.
She snorted.
You sound like a male used to being obeyed. Interesting.
What the hell is interesting about it?
The rebels must have something on you, to make you risk your position by doing this.
I thought you didn't give a shit about my personal life.
I don't. But knowledge is power. I'm curious about who you might be if the Reapers tried to grab you. And why you allow the rebels to push you around.
Maybe I wanted to join.
She laughed, the sound sharp as a blade.
I've found that the ruling class rarely do such things out of the kindness of their hearts.
Cynical.
Perhaps, but it's true.
I could name a highly placed Vanir who's helping the rebels without being forced into it.
Then they should put a bullet in your head.
Rune stiffened. Excuse me? She waved a hand.
If you know their identity, if you're able to so blithely boast about it, if you are asking too many questions about Agent Spetsos, you're not an asset at all. You're a loose cannon. If the Dreadwolves catch you, how long will it take for you to sing that person's name?
Fuck off.
Have you ever been tortured? It's easy for people to claim they wouldn't break. But when your body is being pulled apart piece by piece, bone by bone, you'd be surprised what people offer to get the pain to stop, even for a second.
Rune's temper flared. You don't know shit about me or what I've been through. He was grateful the night and stars of his skin covered the marks his father's ministrations had left, the ones his ink couldn't hide. Day's flame blazed brighter.
You should mind what you tell people, even among Ophian allies. They have ways of making people disappear.
Like Sophie Renast. Her fire simmered.
Don't repeat her true name to anyone. Refer to her as Agent Cypress.
Rune gritted his teeth. Do you know anything about Sophie?
I assumed she was dead, since you're now my contact.
And if she isn't?
I don't understand.
If she isn't dead, where would she go? Where would she hide? Daybright whirled back toward her end of the bridge.
This meeting is over.
And before Rune could say another word, she vanished, leaving only drifting embers behind. Why the hell would the Asteri create their own mech suit for this war? Hunt asked, rubbing his jaw as he leaned against the kitchen counter the next morning. He tried not to look at the black box on the other end of the counter, but its presence seemed to hum, seemed to hollow out the air around it. Considering the two death marks inside, it was no wonder. Cormac sipped from his tea, face clouded. He'd arrived barely past dawn, apparently after Rune had called him to demand that he rush over, thus dragging Hunt from slumber and Bryce's arms with his knocking.
The suits are the one advantage we have.
Well, that the humans have.
I know that,
Hunt countered tightly.
I've fought them. I know them inside and out.
And he'd taken them apart and sabotaged them so their pilots didn't stand a chance. He'd been content to let that knowledge serve him lately for stuff like fixing Bryce's bike, which he'd gone so far as to wash for her before handing it back over. But if the Asteri were making a mech suit of their own for a Vanir soldier to use?
I always forget,
Rune murmured from where he sat on the couch beside Bryce,
that you fought in two wars.
The one he'd waged and lost with the Fallen, and then the years spent fighting at Sandriel's command against the Ophian rebels.
I don't,
Hunt said, earning an apologetic wince from Rune.
We need to be careful. You're sure this information was real?
Yeah, Rune said. Holstrom settled himself against the wall beside the counter, silently watching the exchange. His face revealed nothing. A laptop sat open on the couch, though, still combing through the years of gallery footage for any hint of Danica. But this conversation with Cormac, this hit on the spine.
You likely have double agents in Ophion,
Hunt said to the Avalon Prince.
Not Daybright,
Cormac said with absolute certainty.
Anyone can be bought,
Hunt said. Bryce said nothing, busy pretending that she was more interested in her pink toenails than this conversation. Hunt knew she was picking over every word. He'd emerged from the bedroom intending to tell every single person who'd crossed his path that she was his mate. But Rune had been waiting with this news instead, apparently having slept on the couch.
Regardless, Cormac said tightly, I need to pass this information along.
I'll go with you, Rune said. Bryce's mouth popped open in alarm.
You could be walking right into a trap, Hunt warned.
We don't have any choice, Cormac countered.
We can't risk losing this opportunity.
And what do you risk losing if it's fake?
Lightning crackled at Hunt's fingers. Bryce's eyes flicked up to him at last, wary and full of caution. She said before Cormac could answer,
This isn't our business, Hunt.
Like hell it isn't. We're tied into it whether we want to be or not.
Golden fire filled her gaze.
Yes, but we have nothing to do with this hit, this intel. It's Ophion's problem to deal with.
She straightened, giving Rune a scathing look that seemed to say, you should stay out of it too, but faced Cormac.
So go report to command and keep us out of it.
Cormac stared her down, his jaw working. She gave him a slash of a smile that sent Hunt's blood thrumming.
Not used to females giving you orders.
There are plenty of females in command.
Cormac's nostrils flared.
And I would advise you to behave as a fey female ought to when we are seen together in public. It shall be hard enough to convince others of our betrothal, thanks to that smell on you.
What smell? Bryce said,
and Hunt braced his feet. She could take care of herself in a fight, but he'd still enjoy pummeling the bastard. Cormac motioned between her and Hunt.
You think I can't scent what went down between you two?
Bryce leaned back against the cushions.
You mean that he went down on me?
Hunt choked, and Rune let out a garbled string of curses. Ethan walked to the coffee machine and muttered something about it being too early. Cormac, however, didn't so much as blush. He said gravely,
Your mingling scents will jeopardize this ruse.
I'll take that into consideration, Bryce said, and then winked at Hunt.
Gods, she'd tasted like a dream, and the sweet, breathy sounds she made when she came. Hunt rolled out the tautness in his shoulders. They had a long day ahead of them, a dangerous day. They were going to the Bone Quarter today, for fuck's sake. The street camera footage had pinpointed that the Reaper who'd attacked Bryce and Rune had been within a block of the Black Dock. But even with Declan's skills, they hadn't found any concrete proof of the Reaper sailing over. It was enough of a link that they'd question the Underking about it, though. And if they got through that, then Hunt planned to have a long, long night. He'd already made a reservation at a fancy-ass hotel restaurant and reserved a large suite with rose petals and champagne. Cormac drummed his fingers on the table and said to Bryce,
If you find a meal in the Bone Quarter, let me know immediately.
Bryce, to Hunt's surprise, didn't object. Cormac pivoted to Rune, jerking his chin to the door.
We need to get going. If that supply train is leaving in 3 days, we can't waste a moment.
He looked sharply at Hunt.
Even if it's bad intel.
I'm ready. Rune got to his feet. He frowned at his sister.
Good hunting.
Stay out of trouble today, please.
Right back at you.
Bryce grinned, though Hunt noted that her attention was on the Star Sword, as if she were speaking to it, pleading with it to protect her brother. Then her gaze slid to Cormac, who already stood at the door.
Be careful, she said pointedly to Rune.
The warning was clear enough. Don't trust Cormac entirely. Rune nodded slowly. The male might have claimed he'd changed since trying to kill the prince decades ago, but Hunt didn't trust him either. Rune turned toward Ethan as the wolf aimed for the discarded laptop on the couch.
Look, I hate to drag anyone else into our shit, but you want to come?
Holstrom jerked his chin toward the laptop.
What about the footage?
It can wait a few hours. You can look through any flagged sections when we get back. We could use your skills today.
What skills? Bryce demanded. Pure protective alarm. Being good at sunball doesn't count.
Thanks, Bryce,
Ethan grumbled. And before Rune could supply a reason for inviting the wolf, he said,
Sabine will have a fit if I'm caught helping you.
That was the least of what would happen if he was caught aiding rebels. Hunt tried not to shift his wings, tried to halt the echo of agony through them.
You don't answer to Sabine anymore,
Rune countered. Ethan considered.
I guess I'm already in this mess.
Hunt could have sworn guilt and worry filled Bryce's face. She chewed her bottom lip, but didn't challenge Ethan further.
Okay, Ethan continued, plugging in the laptop. Let me get dressed.
Bryce turned warily toward the black box on the counter, the looming, thrumming death marks within. But she said, Right, Athalar. Time to be on our way. Suit up. Hunt followed Bryce back into her bedroom, their bedroom now, he supposed, to see her pick up a holster and prop her leg on the bed. Her short pink skirt slid back, revealing that lean, long expanse of golden leg. His mind went blank as she strapped the holster around her upper thigh. Her fingers snagged on the buckle, and Hunt was instantly there to help, savoring the silken warmth of her bare skin.
You're really wearing this to the bone quarter?
He drifted a hand to toy with the soft pleats of the skirt, no matter that her gun would be useless against any reapers that came their way.
It's 1,000 degrees today and humid. I'm not wearing pants.
What if we get into trouble?
He might have taken far longer on the buckle than necessary. He knew she was letting him. She smiled wickedly.
Then I suppose the Under King will get a nice view of my ass.
He gave her a flat look. Bryce rolled her eyes, but said, Give me 5 minutes to change. Chapter 29
I think he knows we're coming. Bryce whispered to Hunt
as they stood on the edge of the black dock and peered through the mist swarming the Istros. Thankfully, there had been no sailings today, but a path through the mists spread ahead, an opening through which they'd sail to get to the Bone Quarter. She knew, because she'd sailed through it herself once.
Good,
Hunt said, and Bryce caught his glance at the star sword she'd sheathed down her back. Rune had left it for her with the note, Bring it, don't be stupid. For once in her life, she'd listened. And Rune had listened when she'd encouraged him, in their swift mind-to-mind conversation, not to trust Cormac. His invitation to Ethan had been the result. She could only pray they'd stay safe, and that Cormac was true to his word. Bryce shifted, tucking the thoughts away, the half-rotted black wood beneath her shoes creaking. She'd wound up changing into black leggings and a gray t-shirt before leaving. Yet even with the mist, the heat somehow continued, turning her clothes into a sticky second skin. She should have stayed in the skirt, if only because it allowed her to conceal the gun, which she'd left behind. After Hunt had mortifyingly reminded her of its uselessness against anything they'd encounter in the Bone Quarter.
Well, here goes, Bryce said, fishing out the onyx coin from the pocket in the back of her waistband.
The stifling earthen smell of mold stuffed itself up her nostrils, as if the coin itself were rotting. Hunt pulled his coin from a compartment in his battlesuit and sniffed, frowning.
It smells worse the closer we get to the Bone Quarter.
Then good riddance.
Bryce flipped the death mark with her thumb into the fog-veiled water below. Hunts followed. Both only made one ripple before they went rushing toward the Bone Quarter, hidden from view.
I'm sure a few people have told you this, a male voice said behind them, but that is a very bad idea.
Bryce whirled, but Hunt bristled.
What the fuck do you want, Baxian?
The hellhound emerged like a wraith from the mist, wearing his own battlesuit. Shadows had settled beneath his dark eyes, like he hadn't slept in a while.
Why are you here? I'd like to know the same,
Hunt bit out. Baxian shrugged.
Enjoying the sights, he said,
and Bryce knew it for the lie it was. Had he followed them?
I thought we were supposed to be paired up, Athalar.
You never showed. Does Celestina know about this? It's my day off,
Hunt said, which was true.
So no, it's none of her business, or yours. Go report to Isaiah. He'll give you something to do.
Baxian's attention shifted to Bryce, and she held his stare. His gaze dipped to the scar on her chest, only the upper spikes of the star visible above the neckline of her t-shirt.
Who are you going to see over there?
His voice had gone low, dangerous.
The Underking,
Bryce said cheerfully. She could feel Hunt's wariness growing with each breath. Baxian blinked slowly, as if reading the threat emanating from Athalar.
I can't tell if that's a joke, but if it isn't, you're the dumbest people I've ever met.
Something stirred behind them, and then a long black boat appeared from the slender path in the mists, drifting toward the dock. Bryce reached out a hand for the prow. Her fingers curled over the screaming skeleton carved into its arch.
Guess you'll have to wait to find out, she said, and leapt in.
She didn't look back as Hunt climbed in after her, the boat rocking with his weight. It pulled away from the black dock along that narrow path, leaving Baxian behind to watch until the mists swallowed him.
You think he'll say anything?
Bryce whispered into the gloom as the path ahead vanished too. Hunt's voice was strained, gravelly as it floated toward her.
I don't see why he would. You were attacked by Reapers yesterday. We're going to talk to the Underking about it today. There's nothing wrong or suspicious about that.
Right. This shit with Ophion had her overthinking every moment.
Neither of them spoke after that. Neither of them dared. The boat sailed on across the Two Silent River, all the way to the dark and distant shore. Hunt had never seen such a place, knew in his bones he never wanted to see it again. The boat advanced with no sail, no rudder, no rower or ferryman, as if it were pulled by invisible beasts toward the isle across the Istros. The temperature dropped with each foot, until Hunt could hear Bryce's teeth clacking through the mist, so thick her face was nearly obscured. The memory of Baxian nagged at him, snooping asshole. But he had a feeling that the Hellhound wouldn't go blabbing. Not yet. Baxian was more likely to gather intel, to shadow their every move, and then strike when he had enough to damn them. Hunt would turn him into smoldering cinders before he could do that, though. What a fucking mess. The boat jolted, colliding with something with a thunk. Hunt stiffened, lightning at his fingertips, but Bryce rose, graceful as a leopard, the Star Sword's dark hilt muted and matte in the dimness. The boat had stopped at the base of worn, crumbling steps. The mists above them parted to reveal an archway of carved ancient bone, brown with age in spots. Memento mori, it said across the top. Hunt interpreted its meaning differently here than in the meat market. Remember that you will die and end here. Remember who your true masters are. The hair on Hunt's arms rose beneath his battle suit. Bryce leapt from the boat with fey elegance, twisting to offer a hand back to him. He took it, only because he wanted to touch her, feel her warmth in this lifeless place. But her hands were icy, her skin drab and waxy. Even her shimmering hair had dulled. His own skin appeared paler, sickly, as if the bone quarter already sucked the life from them. He interlaced their fingers as they strode up the seven steps to the archway and tucked all the worries and fears regarding Baxian, regarding this rebellion, deep within him. They'd only be a distraction. His boots scuffed on the steps. Here, Bryce had once knelt. Right here, she'd traded her resting place for Danica's. He squeezed her hand tighter. Bryce squeezed back, leaning into him as they stepped under the archway. Dry ground lay beyond, mist and grayness and silence. Marble and granite obelisks rose like thick spears, many inscribed, but not with names, just with strange symbols. Grave markers or something else? Hunt scanned the gloom, ears straining for any hint of Reapers or the ruler they sought. And for any hint of Emil or Sophie, but not one footprint marked the ground. Not one scent lingered in the mist. The thought of the kid hiding out here, of any living being dwelling here, fuck. Bryce whispered, voice thick.
It's supposed to be green. I saw a land of green and sunlight.
Hunt lifted a brow, but her eyes, now a flat yellow, searched the mists.
The Underking showed me the pack of devils after the attack on the city. Her words shook. Showed me that they rested here among shining meadows. Not this.
Maybe the living aren't allowed to see the truth, unless the Underking allows it.
She nodded, but he read the doubt tightening her ashen face. He said,
"No sign of a meal, unfortunately."
Bryce shook her head. "Nothing. Though I don't know why I thought it'd be easy. It's not like he'd be camped out here in a tent or something."
Hunt, despite himself, offered her a half smile. "So we head to the boss, then."
He kept scanning the mists and earth for any hint of Emil or his sister as they continued on. Bryce halted suddenly between two black obelisks, each engraved with a different array of those odd symbols. The obelisks, and dozens more beyond them, flanked what seemed to be a central walkway stretching into the mist. She drew the star sword, and Hunt didn't have time to stop her before she whacked it against the side of the closest obelisk. It clanked, its ringing echoing into the gloom. She did it again, then a third time.
"Ringing the dinner bell?" Hunt asked.
"Worth a shot," Bryce muttered back. And smarter than running around shouting Emil's and Sophie's names. Though, if they were as survival savvy as they seemed, Hunt doubted either would come running to investigate. As the noise faded, what remained of the light dimmed. What remained of the warmth turned to ice. Someone, something, had answered. The other being they sought here. Their breath hung in the air, and Hunt angled himself in front of Bryce, monitoring the road ahead. When the Underking spoke, however, in a voice simultaneously ancient and youthful, but cold and dry, the sound came from behind them.
"This land is closed to you, Bryce Quinlan."
A tremor went through Bryce, and Hunt rallied his power, lightning crackling in his ears. But his mate said, "I don't get a VIP pass." The voice from the mist echoed around them.
"Why have you come and brought Orion Athalar with you?"
"Call him Hunt," Bryce drawled. "He gets huffy if you go all formal on him." Hunt gave her an incredulous look, but the Underking materialized from the mist, inch by inch. He stood at least 10 feet tall, robes of richest black velvet draping to the gravel. Darkness swirled on the ground before him, and his head. Something primal in him screamed to run, to bow, to fall on his knees and beg. A desiccated corpse, half-rotted and crowned with gold and jewels, observed them. Hideous beyond belief, yet regal. Like a long-dead king of old left to rot in some barrow, who had emerged to make himself master of this land. Bryce lifted her chin and said, bold as Luna herself,
"We need to talk."
"Talk."
The lipless mouth pulled back, revealing teeth brown with age. Hunt reminded himself firmly that the Underking was feared, yes, but not evil. Bryce replied, "About your goons grabbing my sweet brother and dragging him into the sewer. They claimed they were sent by Apollyon." Hunt tensed as she spoke the Prince of the Pit's name. Bryce continued, utterly nonchalant, "But I don't see how they could have been sent by anyone but you." The Underking hissed,
"Do not speak that name on this side of the rift."
Hunt followed Bryce's irreverence.
"Is this the part where you insist you knew nothing?"
"You have the nerve to cross the river, to take a black boat to my shores, and accuse me of this treachery."
The darkness behind the Underking shivered. In fear or delight, Hunt couldn't tell. "Some of your reapers survived me," Bryce said. "Surely they've filled you in by now." Silence fell, like the world in the aftermath of a boom of thunder. The Underking's milky, lidless eyes slid to the star sword in Bryce's hand.
"Some did not survive you."
Bryce's swallow was audible. Hunt swore silently. Bryce said,
Why did you feel the need to attack, to pretend the Reapers were messengers of the Prince of the Pit? She clicked her tongue. I thought we were friends.
Death has no friends,
the Underking said, eerily calm.
I did not send any Reapers to attack you, but I do not tolerate those who falsely accuse me in my realm.
And we're supposed to take you at your word that you're innocent? Bryce pushed.
Do you call me a liar, Bryce Quinlan?
Bryce said, cool and calm as a queen. You mean to tell me that there are Reapers who can simply defect and serve hell?
From whence do you think the Reapers first came? Who first ruled them, ruled the vampires? The Reapers chose Midgard. But I am not surprised some have changed their minds.
Bryce demanded. And you don't care if hell steps into your territory?
Who said they were my Reapers to begin with? There are none unaccounted for here. There are many other necropolises they might hail from.
And other half-life rulers they answered to.
Reapers don't travel far beyond their realms, Hunt managed to say.
A comforting lie for mortals,
the Underking smiled faintly.
All right, Hunt said, fingers tightening around Bryce's.
The Underking seemed to be telling them the truth, which meant,
well, fuck, maybe Apollyon was the one who'd sent the Reapers. And if that part was true, then what he'd said about Emil.
Bryce seemed to be following the same train of thought, because she said, I'm looking for two people who might be hiding out here. Any insight?
I know all the dead who reside here.
They're alive, Bryce said. Humans, or part humans. The Underking surveyed them once more, right down to their souls.
No one enters this land without my knowledge.
People can slip in, Hunt countered.
No,
the creature said, smiling again.
They cannot. Whoever you seek, they are not here.
Hunt pushed. Why should we believe you?
I swear upon C'thona's dark crown that no living beings other than yourselves are currently on this island.
Well, vows didn't get much more serious than that. Even the Underking wouldn't fuck with invoking the Earth Goddess's name in a vow. But that left them back at square one. If Emil and Sophie weren't here and couldn't even enter, Danica had to have known that. She'd have been smart enough to look into the rules before sending them here for hiding. This was a dead end, but it still left Apollyon looking for the kid, and them needing to find him before anyone else.
So Hunt said, You've been enlightening. Thanks for your time.
But Bryce didn't move. Her face had gone stony. Where's the green and sunlight you showed me? Was that another comforting lie?
You saw what you wished to see.
Bryce's lips went white with rage. Where's the pack of devils?
You are not entitled to speak to them.
Is Lahaba here?
I do not know of one with such a name.
A fire sprite died 3 months ago. Is she here?
Fire sprites do not come to the Bone Quarter. The lowers are of no use.
Hunt arched a brow.
No use for what?
The Underking smiled again, perhaps a shade ruefully.
Comforting lies, remember.
Bryce pressed. Did Danica Fendier say anything to you before she vanished this spring?
You mean before she traded her soul to save yours, as you did with your own?
Nausea surged through Hunt. He hadn't let himself think much on it. That Bryce would not be allowed here, that he wouldn't rest with her one day. One day that might come very soon if they were caught associating with rebels.
Yes, Bryce said tightly. Before Danica helped to save this city. Where's the pack of devils? She asked again, voice hitching. Something large growled and shifted in the shadows behind the Underking, but remained hidden by the mists. Hunt's lightning zapped at his fingers in warning.
Life is a beautiful ring of growth and decay,
the Underking said, the words echoing through the sleeping city around them.
No part left to waste. What we receive upon birth, we give back in death. What is granted to you mortals in the eternal lands is merely another step in the cycle, a waypoint along your journey toward the void.
Hunt growled.
Let me guess, you hail from hell too?
I hail from a place between stars, a place that has no name and never shall. But I know of the void that the princes of hell worship. It birthed me, too.
The star in the center of Bryce's chest flared. The Underking smiled, and his horrific face turned ravenous.
I beheld your light across the river that day. Had I only known when you first came to me, things might have been quite different.
Hunt's lightning surged, but he reined it in.
What do you want with her?
What I want from all souls who pass here. What I give back to the dead gate, to all of Midgard. Energy, life, power. You did not give your power to the Eleusian system. You made the drop outside of it. Thus, you still possess some first light, raw, nutritious first light.
Nutritious? Bryce said. The Underking waved a bony hand.
Can you blame me for sampling the goods as they pass through the dead gate?
Hunt's mouth dried up.
You feed on the souls of the dead?
Only those who are worthy. Who have enough energy. There is no judgment but that. Whether a soul possesses enough residual power to make a hearty meal, both for myself and for the dead gate. As their souls pass through the dead gate, I take a bite or two.
Hunt cringed inwardly. Maybe he had been too hasty in deeming the being before him not evil. The Underking went on.
The rituals were all invented by you, your ancestors, to endure the horror of the offering.
But Danica was here. She answered me. Bryce's voice broke.
She was here. She and all of the newly dead from the past several centuries. Just long enough that their living descendants and loved ones either forgot or don't come asking. They dwell here until then in relative comfort, unless they make themselves a nuisance and I decide to send them into the gate sooner. But when the dead are forgotten, their names no longer whispered on the wind, then they are herded through the gate to become first light, or second light, as it is called when the power comes from the dead. Ashes to ashes and all that.
The sleeping city is a lie?
Hunt asked. His mother's face flashed before him.
A comforting one, as I have said.
The Underking's voice again became sorrowful.
One for your benefit.
And the Asteri know about this?
Hunt demanded.
I would never presume to claim what the Holy Ones know or don't know.
Why are you telling us any of this? Bryce blanched with horror.
Because he's not letting us leave here alive,
Hunt breathed,
and their souls wouldn't live on either. The light vanished entirely, and the voice of the Underking echoed around them.
That is the first intelligent thing you've said.
A rumbling growl shook the ground, reverberated up Hunt's legs. He clutched Bryce to him, snapping out his wings for a blind flight upward. The Underking crooned.
I should like to taste your light, Bryce Quinlan.
Chapter 30 Rune had grown up in Crescent City. He knew it had places to avoid, yet it had always felt like home, like his. Until today.
Ephraim must have arrived,
Ethan murmured, as they waited in the dimness of a dusty alley for Cormac to finish making the information drop.
And brought the hind with him.
And she brought her entire pack of dreadwolves.
To what end?
Rune toyed with the ring through his bottom lip. They'd seen two of the elite Imperial interrogators on the way to the meetup near the old square. Rune had veiled himself and Holstrom in shadows, while Cormac spoke at the other end of the alley with the cloaked, hooded figure disguised as a begging vagrant. Rune could make out the outline of a gun strapped to the figure's thigh beneath the threadbare cloak. Ethan eyed him.
You think the hind's onto us?
Us.
Fuck, just that word freaked him out when it came to consorting with rebels. Rune monitored the bright street beyond the alley, willing his shadows to keep them hidden from what prowled the sidewalks. Tourists and city dwellers alike kept a healthy distance from the dreadwolves. The wolfshifters were exactly as Rune had expected, cold-eyed and harsh-faced above their pristine gray uniforms. A black and white patch of a wolf's skull and crossbones adorned that uniform's left arm. The seven golden stars of the Asteri shone on a red patch above their hearts, and on their starched high collars, silver darts. The number varied on each member. One dart for every rebel spy hunted down and broken. The two that Rune had passed had borne 8 and 15 darts, respectively.
It's like the city's gone quiet.
Ethan observed, head cocked.
Isn't this the least safe place for this meetup?
Don't be paranoid, Rune said, though he'd thought the same. Down the alley, Cormac finished and strode back to them. Within a blink, the hunched figure was gone, swallowed into the crowds teeming on the main avenue, all too focused on the dreadwolves slinking among them to remark on a hobbling vagrant. Cormac had veiled his face in shadows, and they pulled away now as he met Rune's stare.
The agent told me. They think the Asteri suspect that Emil came here after he fled Ophion. It's possible the hind brought the dreadwolves to hunt for him. The sight of those wolves in this city is a disgrace,
Ethan snarled.
No one's going to stomach this shit.
You'd be surprised what people will stomach when they find their families threatened,
Cormac said.
I've seen cities and towns fall silent in the wake of a dreadwolf pack's arrival. Places as vibrant as this now warrens of fear and mistrust. They too thought no one would tolerate it, that someone would do something. Only when it was too late did they realize that they should have done something.
A chill ran up Rune's arms.
I have to make some calls. The Ox and the 33rd run this city, not the Hind.
Shit. He'd have to see his father. He might be a bastard, but the Autumn King wouldn't appreciate having the Hind infringe on his turf.
Ethan's jaw twitched. I wonder what Sabine and the Prime will do about them.
No loyalty among wolves,
Cormac asked.
We are wolves, Ethan challenged.
The Dreadwolves?
They're demons in wolves' fur, wolves in name only.
And if the Dreadwolves request to stay at the den,
Cormac asked,
will the Prime or Sabine find their morals holding firm?
Ethan didn't answer. Cormac went on.
This is what the Asteri do. This is Midgard's true reality. We believe we are free. We are powerful. We are near immortals. But when it comes down to it, we're all the Asteri's slaves. And the illusion can be shattered this quickly.
Then why the fuck are you trying to bring this shit here?
Ethan demanded.
Because it has to end at some point,
Rune murmured. He shuddered inwardly. Cormac opened his mouth, surprise lighting his face, but whirled, as a male, towering and muscle-bound and clad in the impeccable uniform of the Dreadwolves, appeared at the other end of the alley. So many silver darts covered his collar that from a distance it looked like a mouthful of razor-sharp teeth around his neck.
Mordok,
Ethan breathed. Genuine fear laced his scent. Cormac motioned for the wolf to be silent.
Mordok,
Rune scanned his memory. The second in command to the Hind, her chief butcher and enforcer. The Dreadwolf monitored the alley with golden glowing eyes. Dark claws glinted at his fingertips, as if he lived in some state between human and wolf. Cormac's nose crinkled. The prince trembled, anger and violence leaking from him. Rune gripped his cousin's shoulder, fingers digging into the hard muscle. Slowly, Mordok prowled down the alley, noting the brick walls, the dusty ground. Fuck, they left tracks all over this alley. None of them dared to breathe too loudly as they pressed into the wall. Mordok angled his head, scalp gleaming through his buzzed hair, then crouched, muscles flexing beneath his gray uniform, and ran a thick finger through a footprint. He lifted the dirt to his nose and sniffed. His teeth, slightly too long, gleamed in the dimness of the alley. Mind to mind, Rune asked Cormac,
"Does Mordok know your scent?" "I don't think so. Does he know yours?"
"No, I've never met him,"
Rune said to Ethan, who jolted slightly at the sound of Rune's voice in his mind.
"Do you know Mordok? Have you met him before?"
Ethan's gaze remained on the powerful male now rising to sniff the air.
"Yes, a long time ago. He came to visit the den."
"Why?"
Ethan at last responded, eyes wide and pained.
"Because he's Danica's father."
Bryce had enough presence of mind to draw the star sword, to rally her power even though the thing before them. Oh, gods.
"Allow me to introduce my shepherd,"
the Underking said from the mist ahead, standing beside a 10-foot-tall black dog. Each of its fangs was as long as one of her fingers, all hooked like a shark's, designed to latch into flesh and hold tight while it ripped and shredded. Its eyes were milky white, sightless, identical to the Underking's. Her light would have no effect on something that was already blind. The dog's fur, sleek and iridescent enough that it almost resembled scales, flowed over bulky, bunched muscle, claws like razor blades sliced into the dry ground. Hunt's lightning crackled, skittering at Bryce's feet.
"That's a demon,"
he ground out. He'd fought enough of them to know.
"An experiment of the Prince of the Ravines, from the First Wars,"
the Underking rasped.
"Forgotten and abandoned here in Midgard during the aftermath. Now my faithful companion and helper. You'd be surprised how many souls do not wish to make their final offering to the gate. The shepherd, well, it herds them for me, as it shall herd you."
"Fry this fucker,"
Bryce muttered to Hunt as the dog snarled.
"I'm assessing."
"Assess faster. Roast it like a... Do not make a joke about hot dog." Bryce had no sooner finished saying the words than the hound lunged. Hunt struck, swift and sure, a lightning bolt spearing toward its neck. It screamed, dodging to the left, an obelisk crumbling beneath it. Bryce pivoted to where the Underking had been, but only mist remained. Coward. Hunt struck again, forked lightning splitting the sky before it slammed into the creature's back, but it rolled once more, shaking off the lightning.
"The fuck?"
Hunt panted, drawing his sword and gun as he moved in front of Bryce. The shepherd halted, eyeing them. Then the hound peeled apart. First its head split, two other heads joining the first. and then the three-headed dog continued to separate until three hounds snarled at them. Three beasts that shared one mind, one goal, kill.
Run,
Hunt ordered, not taking his focus from the three dogs.
Get back to the river and fucking swim.
Not without you.
I'll be right behind.
Just fly us, the dog to the left snarled, bristling. Bryce faced it, and in that blink, the one on the right leapt. Hunt's lightning snapped free, and Bryce didn't hesitate before she turned and ran. Mist swallowed her, swallowed Hunt, until he was nothing but light rippling behind her. She sped past obelisks and stone mausoleums, resting places for the dead, or mere cages to keep them until they could become food, valuable for their first light, second light. Thunderous steps crunched behind her. She dared a glance over her shoulder. One of the hounds rampaged at her heels, closing the distance. Hunt's lightning flashed behind it, along with his bellow of rage. That was her mate she was leaving behind. Bryce cut inland. The beast, apparently convinced she was making a run for the river, pivoted too slowly. It crashed into a mausoleum, sending both structure and hound sprawling. Bryce kept running, sprinted as fast as she could back toward Hunt. But the mist was a labyrinth, and Hunt's lightning seemed to launch from everywhere. Obelisks loomed like giants. Bryce slammed into something hard and smooth, her teeth punching through her lower lip, and the star sword clattering out of her hand. The coppery tang of blood filled her mouth as she hit the ground. Flipping over, she peered up to find herself sprawled before a crystal archway. The dead gate. A snarl rumbled the earth. Bryce twisted, crawling backward to the gate. The shepherd emerged from the mist. And in the grayish dirt between them lay the star sword, glowing faintly. Rune's blood iced over at Ethan's declaration. Did Bryce know Mordok was Danica's father? She'd have mentioned it if she did, right?
It wasn't spoken of, Ethan explained. Sabine and the others tried to forget. Danica refused to acknowledge Mordok. Never said his name, or that she even had a father. But a few of us were at the den the only time he came to see his daughter. She was 17 and refused to even see him. Afterward, she wouldn't talk about it except to say that she was nothing like him. She never mentioned Mordok again.
The male approached, and Rune scanned for any hint of Danica Fendir in him. He found none.
They don't resemble each other at all.
Ethan said warily, sadly.
The similarities run beneath the surface.
Rune waited for the blow, knew it was coming even before Ethan explained.
He's a bloodhound.
Rune said to Cormac,
teleport us the fuck out of here.
He should have done it the moment they saw Mordok coming.
I can only take one at a time.
Mordok drew closer.
Take Ethan and go.
I won't be able to pinpoint you in the shadows when I return, Cormac answered.
Be ready to run to the avenue on my signal.
Then he grabbed Ethan and vanished. Rune kept perfectly still as the wolf prowled near, sniffing, head swaying from side to side.
I can smell you, Feyling,
Mordok growled, voice like stones cracking against each other.
I can smell the coffee on your breath.
Rune kept his shadows tight around him, blending into the dimness along the alley's far wall. He made each step silent, though the dusty ground threatened to betray him.
What were you doing here, I wonder?
Mordok said, halting to turn in place, tracking Rune.
I saw your agent go in, the vagabond. He slipped my net. But why did you stay?
Where the hell was Cormac? Considering that Bryce and Hunt were currently in the Bone Quarter, Rune had expected them to be the ones in major peril today. He kept moving, slowly and silently. The bright open street lay beyond. The crowd might hide him, but not his scent, and his shadows would be of no use out in the sunny open.
Hunting you all down like vermin shall be diverting,
Mordok said, pivoting in place as if he could see Roon through the shadows.
This city has been coddled for far too long.
Roon's temper unsheathed its talons, but he willed it down.
Ah, that annoys you. I can smell it.
A savage smile.
I shall remember that smell.
At the other end of the alley, Roon's magic picked up the flicker of Cormac arriving, only long enough to scuff his shoes in the dirt and then vanish. Mordok whirled toward it, and Roon ran, dropping the shadows around himself. Cormac appeared in a writhing nest of darkness, grabbed his arm, and teleported them out. Roon could only pray to Luna that by the time Mordok had faced the street again, nothing remained of his scent for the Bloodhound to detect. Chapter 31 Roon nursed his glass of whiskey, trying to calm his frayed nerves. Ethan, seated across from him at a quiet bar in Fyro, was watching the sports highlights on the TV above the liquor display. Cormac had dropped them both here before teleporting away, presumably to warn his rebel counterparts about what had happened with Mordok. Danica's father. Bryce would have a fit. Had her sire's involvement with the Dreadwolves been part of what spurred Danica to work with the rebels? She was rebellious and defiant enough to do such a thing. And Mordok knew Roon's scent now, knew Ethan's scent had been there, which was why Cormac had brought them here. So there would be video proof of them far from the old square at the time Mordok would claim Ethan had been in the alley. Ethan said nothing as the minutes wore on, his whiskey vanishing with them. No matter that it was barely 11 in the morning, and only one other person sat at the bar. A hunched female who looked like she'd seen better years. Decades. Neither of them dared utter a word about what had happened. So Roon said to Ethan,
I asked you to join me here so we could chat about something.
Ethan blinked.
Yeah?
Roon said to him, mind to mind,
Play along. I have no idea if the cameras have audio, but in case they do, I want our meeting here to seem planned.
Ethan's face remained casual, intrigued.
Got it.
Roon made sure his voice was loud enough to be picked up, as he said, How do you feel about moving in with me and the guys? Ethan angled his head.
What?
Like, live with you? His surprise seemed genuine. Roon shrugged.
Why not?
You're Fae. Yeah, but we hate the angels more than we hate wolves, so you're only our second worst enemy. Ethan chuckled, some color returning to his face. A winning argument.
I mean it.
Roon said.
You honestly want to stay at Bryce's apartment and endure her and Hunt hooking up nonstop?
Ethan snorted.
Hell no. But why? Beyond an excuse for the cameras,
Ethan said silently. Roon leaned back in his chair. You seem like a decent male. You're helping Deck with the footage stuff, and you need a place to stay.
Why not?
Ethan seemed to weigh his response. I'll think about it. Take all the time you need. The offer stands. Ethan straightened, his attention darting behind Roon. He went wholly still. Roon didn't dare look. Not as light footsteps sounded, followed by a second thudding pair. Before he could ask Ethan mind to mind what he saw, Roon found himself faced with the most beautiful female he'd ever seen.
Mind if I join?
Her voice was lovely. Fair and cool, yet no light shone in her amber eyes. A step behind her, a dark-haired, pale-faced female Malak grinned with wicked amusement. She was narrow-featured, black-winged, with a wildness like the western wind.
Hello, princeling. Pup.
Roon's blood chilled as the harpy slid into the seat to his left. An assortment of knives glinted on the belt at her slim waist. But Roon peered up again at the beautiful female, whose face he knew well thanks to the news and TV, though he'd never seen it in person. Her golden hair glinted in the dim lights as she sat on his right and signaled the bartender with an elegant hand.
I thought we'd play a round of cards, the hind said.
Two against one. Those odds were usually laughable for Hunt. But not when his opponents were demons from hell. One of the princes cast off experiments, now acting as the Underking's enforcers, feeding long-dead souls into the gate for second light energy. Like all they were, would ever be, was food to fuel the empire. The demon to his left lunged, teeth snapping. Hunt blasted his lightning, forks of it wrapping around the beast's thick neck. It bucked, bellowing, and the one to his right charged. Hunt lashed at it, another collar of lightning going around its neck, a leash of white light clenched in his fist. Had Bryce made it to the river? The third demon had raced after her before he could stop it. But she was fast, and she was smart. The demons before him halted. They shuddered and melted back into each other, becoming one beast again. His lightning remained around its neck, but he could do nothing as it flexed and shattered the lightning sizzling into its flesh. Something of that size and speed would use the 2 seconds of slowness it took him to get airborne and swallow him whole. This wasn't how he'd expected the morning to go. He rallied his power, focusing. He'd killed Sandriel with this lightning. A demon should be nothing. But before he could act, a scream rent the mists to the southeast. The beast twisted toward the sound, sniffing. And before Hunt could stop it, faster than his lightning's whip, it raced off into the mist, after Bryce. Bryce crouched beside the dead gate, sizing up the threats surrounding her. Not just the hound, but the 2 dozen reapers who'd floated from the mists, encircling her. The half-life's rotting flesh reeked, their acid green eyes glowed through the mists. Their rasping whispers slithered like snakes over her skin. The shepherd advanced, cutting her off further. The crystal of the dead gate began to glow white, not from her touch, but as if the reapers were chanting, awakening the dead gate somehow. During the attack on the city, it had channeled her magic against the demons, but today, today it would siphon off her power, her soul. The gates sucked magic from whoever touched them and stored it. She'd inherited her power from that very force. But this one fed that power right back into the power grid, like some fucked up rechargeable battery. Somehow she'd become food. Was that what she'd traded away? A few centuries here, thinking she'd found eternal rest, and then meeting this end? Instead, she'd face a trip straight into the meat grinder of souls immediately when she died. Which seemed likely to be soon. There was a good chance that she could draw from the gate as well, she supposed. But what if the dead gate was somehow different? What if she went to summon power, only to lose all of hers? She couldn't risk it. Bryce got to her feet, hands shaking. The star sword lay between her and the shepherd. Hunt's lightning had stopped. Where was he? Would a mate know? Would a mate feel? Another dog stepped from the mist, then peeled apart into two, the ones Hunt had been fighting. No blood stained their muzzles, but Hunt wasn't with them. Not a sliver of his lightning graced the mists. The three dogs advanced, sniffing for her location. The reapers kept chanting as the dead gate glowed brighter. That teleporting of Cormac's would have been helpful. She could have grabbed Hunt 5 minutes ago and vanished. She glanced at the sword. It was now or never, live or die, like really die. Bryce sucked in a breath and didn't give herself a chance to second-guess her stupidity. She bolted for the hounds. They charged, leaping for her with 3 sets of snapping jaws. Bryce dropped, the rocky ground shredding her face as she slid beneath them until the star sword was cradled to her body. Something burning shot down her back. The world boomed with the impact of the 3 hounds landing and pivoting. Bryce tried to get up, to hold the sword out, but blood warmed her back. A claw must have raked up her spine while one of the hounds had leapt over her, and the splintering, blistering pain. Hunt was out there somewhere,
possibly dying.
Bryce dug the tip of the star sword into the earth, using it to shove herself up to her knees. Her back screamed in agony. She might have screamed with it. The three hounds, the reapers beyond them, seemed to smile.
Yeah,
Bryce panted, heaving to her feet.
Fuck you too.
Her legs wobbled, yet she managed to lift the black sword in front of her. The three beasts roared, threatening to split her ears. Bryce opened her mouth to roar back. But someone else did it for her. For Hunt, there was only Bryce, bleeding and hurt. Bryce, who'd made that brash run for the sword, probably thinking it was her only shot. Bryce, who'd gotten to her feet anyway and planned to go down swinging. Bryce, his mate. The three hounds merged back into one, readying for the killing blow. Hunt landed in the dirt beside her and let out a bellow that shook the gate itself. Wreathed in lightning from wingtip to toe, Hunt landed beside Bryce so hard the earth shuddered. The power rolling off him sent Bryce's hair floating upward. Primal rage poured from Hunt as he faced down the shepherd, the reapers. She'd never seen anything of the sort. Hunt was the heart of a storm personified. The lightning around him turned blue, like the hottest part of a flame. An image blasted through her mind. She had seen this before. Carved in stone in the lobby of the CCB. A fey male posed like an avenging god, hammer raised to the sky, a channel for his power. Hunt unleashed his lightning at the shepherd, the reapers observing with wide eyes. Bryce was too fast, even for him, as she leapt in front of the blow, star sword extended. A wild theory, only half formed, but Hunt's lightning hit the star sword, and the world erupted. Chapter 32. Hunt screamed as Bryce leapt in front of his power, as his lightning hit the black blade, exploding from the metal, flowing up into her arm, her body, her heart. Light flashed, blinding. No, that was Bryce. Power crackled from every inch of her, and from the star sword she clenched in one hand as she barreled toward the shepherd. It split into three hounds again, and as the first beast landed, Bryce struck. The glowing star sword pierced the thick hide. Lightning exploded across the beast's body. The other two screamed, and reapers began scattering into the mist beyond the obelisks. Bryce whirled as Hunt reached her and said, eyes white with light, "Watch out!" Too late. The beast who'd fallen snapped its tail at Hunt, catching him in the gut and hurling him into the dead gate. He hit the stone and crumpled, his power fizzing out. Bryce shouted his name as she held her ground against the remaining two beasts. The one she'd injured died, twitching on the ground. Hunt gasped for breath, trying to rise. She lifted the sword, crackling with remnants of power. Not much, like the first blow had exhausted most of it. Hunt braced a hand on the dead gate's brass plaque as he tried to raise himself once more. Power sucked from his fingers, pulled into the stone. He snatched his hand back. One of the beasts lunged for Bryce, but bounced away at a swipe of her sword. She needed more power. Hunt peered at the dead gate's archway above him. First light flowed both ways, into the dead gate and out of it. And here, where the last power of the dead was fed into it, here was a well, like the one Bryce had used during the attack last spring. Sophie and Emil Renast could channel energy too, and lightning. Hunt was no thunderbird, but could he do the same? Lightning flowed in his veins. His body was equipped to handle raw, sizzling energy. Was this what Apollyon had hinted at? Why the prince wanted not only him and Bryce, but Emil and Sophie? Had the prince of the pit engineered this situation, manipulating them into coming to the bone quarter so that Hunt would be forced to realize what he could do with his own power? Perhaps Emil hadn't even come here at all. Perhaps the reapers had lied about that at Apollyon's behest,
just to get them here, to this place, this moment. Bryce angled her sword higher, ready to fight until the end. Hunt gazed at her for a moment, an avenging angel in her own right, and then slammed his hand onto the brass plaque of the dead gate. Bryce dared only a glance behind her as Hunt bellowed again. He was standing, but his hand. White, blinding first light, or was it second light, flowed from the dead gate up his arm, up his shoulder, and on the other side of the archway, the stone began to go dark, as if he were draining it. The two hounds of the shepherd merged back together, anticipating the next strike. Hunt's voice was a thunderclap as he said behind her, "Light it up, Bryce." The words bloomed in Bryce's heart at the same moment Hunt shot a bolt of his power, the dead gate's power, into her. It burned and roared and blinded, a writhing ball of energy that Bryce broke to her will and funneled into the star sword. Forks of lightning cracked from Hunt, from her, from the sword. The shepherd turned tail and fled. Bryce ran after it. Wings flapped behind her, and then she was in Hunt's arms. He carried her high above the beast's back, then plunged down, lightning streaming around them, a meteorite crashing. They slammed into the creature, and Bryce drove the sword into the shepherd's nape, into the skull beneath. Lightning and first light blasted through it, and the hound exploded into smoking smithereens. Bryce and Hunt hit the ground panting and steaming, soaked with the shepherd's blood. But Hunt was up again in a moment, running, a hand on Bryce's back as he hauled her with him.
"The river,"
he panted, lightning skittering across his teeth, his cheeks. His wings drooped like he was wholly exhausted, like flying was beyond him. Bryce didn't waste breath to answer, as they raced through the mist toward the Istros.
"Two more Vanir bodies this morning, Your Excellency," Therian said by way of greeting, bowing at the waist as he stood in his queen's private study. It was more biodome than study, really, full of plants and a deep, winding stream, studded with large pools. The River Queen swam among the lily pads, her black hair trailing like ink in the water behind her. Her day of meetings might require her to be inside the building, but she took all of them here, sitting in her element. She turned toward Therian, hair plastered down her ample, heavy breasts, her brown skin gleaming with water.
"Tell me where."
Her voice was lovely but subdued, cold.
"One left hanging upside down in an olive grove north of the city, drained and shot the same way as the Selkie. The other crucified on the tree next to him, also shot with a slit throat. They'd clearly been tortured. Two human scents were present. Seems like this happened yesterday." He'd gotten the report this morning over breakfast. Hadn't bothered to go to the sites or ask Holstrom to come with him. Not when the Ox had been the ones to get the call, and would be the ones to handle the bodies.
"And you